Morning Ireland, 7 minutes past eight. This day next week, you'll get to vote for the 10th President of Ireland. The successor to Michael D. Higgins will be Catherine Connolly from Galway or Heather Humphreys from Monaghan. Fianna Fáil nominee Jim Gavin will be on the ballot paper, but he stopped campaigning almost 2 weeks ago. Both remaining candidates are with us in our studio this morning, and you're both very welcome to Morning Ireland. A reminder, this is a debate, not two separate interviews. You're welcome to join in at any stage within reason, and please do. Both of you are promising to represent the people of Ireland, all the people. Both of you earned over €200,000 each last year. With pensions and allowances, you're not going to be far off €200,000 again this year. One of you will earn over €325,000 as president, not to mention your pensions, over €2 million across the 7-year term. How can you relate, represent the vast majority of people when you earn so much more than them? Catherine Connolly.
The salary is as it is. And I've always represented the people, and I've been out since July, every single day since the third week of July, meeting people on the ground. And actually, the momentum is huge. And I have no difficulty relating to people. There's a huge cost of living crisis. There's a major housing crisis. I have never shown any reluctance to speak out on those
matters. None of those issues affect you. How can you relate to the people who earn an awful lot less than you do?
I have no difficulty relating to those people. All of us at different points in our life, we're at different stages in relation to our earnings. And I have absolutely no difficulty. I was out yesterday. People are coming up all of the time to me, indicating how difficult it is. Indeed, actually, I was in a family resource centre and the figures were stark. The manager of that family resource centre told me that people are coming in having given up food for 3 to 4 days, literally, because they keep the food for their children or to save the money for fuel. That's the level of deprivation in our country at the moment.
Heather Humphreys, how can you relate to people who earn an awful lot less than you do?
Good morning, Gavin. And first of all, I bring my life experience to this this job, and I was a credit union manager for many, many years, and I worked with people on the ground. I saw the challenges they faced, and I tried to help them every time I could. And that's what drove me to get into politics. When I saw, you know, during the crash, I got into national politics in 2011. I worked in the credit union before that, and I saw firsthand the challenge that people were facing. I saw people that were going to lose their houses. I tried to help them, and their houses were being repossessed. I did everything I could
to assist
them.
But your life is very different to theirs. How can you purport to represent them when your life is very different to theirs?
But my life has changed, Gavin. I gave up politics last November. I have been in my community. I've been out meeting people.
Still earning a lot of money.
Yeah, well, I'm not, as I say, I'm comfortable, but I'm not on the same, on that level of salary that you mentioned there, but I'm very comfortable and I'm very happy to be out in the community. I'm with people. I see firsthand the challenges they're facing. I'm out talking to people every single day, and on the campaign trail, I have seen people who are facing many difficulties, and that's why I got into politics in the first place.
You say you can relate to people who don't earn as much as you, but did the government, which you were a part of, make a mistake by focusing on developers and businesses rather than ordinary taxpayers in the recent budget?
Yeah, but can I just say, I stepped up in 2011 and I went into government, and I don't regret that.
If you could focus on the question on the recent budget, please.
Yeah, well, look, I don't regret that. I didn't sit on the opposition benches talking about what should be done. I got in there and I made decisions, and of course we didn't get everything right. Of course we want to see more done. I want to see more houses built. I want to see.
And so do the current government. But can you identify a single mistake or missed opportunity the government made in this budget?
Yeah, well, this budget is, the government deals with the budget of the day. I spent many years being the minister trying to fight for different budgets. I fought for money to roll out the hot school meals programme.
On this budget, did the government make a mistake?
Yeah, but look, I'm not going to get into this budget, Gavin, because I'll explain to you why. The role of the president has nothing to do with the budget.
But you surely have an opinion.
Yeah, I have my own opinion.
You're not president yet.
No, I'm just saying the role of the president, Gavin, has nothing to do with the day-to-day running of the country. But what I can tell you is what I did when I was a minister. I fought for budgets. I rolled out the hot school meals programme.
Yes, you've mentioned that.
Yes, and I brought in pay-related benefit. I increased all the payments to the pensioners. I increased the living alone allowance. I increased so many. many different payments right across the board. And I invested in rural Ireland. So I fought for the budgets and I invested that money right across this country, whether it was into families or whether it was into remote working hubs or whether it was to improve the centre of our towns. So I can only give you my record.
Catherine Connolly, you've been a TD since 2016. You could have gone into government in 2016, 2020 and this year, but in each case you chose to remain in opposition on the sidelines. When have you ever demonstrated taking real responsibility rather than opposing from the sidelines?
I've demonstrated responsibility all my life, from a very early age in a big family, subsequently in many different roles as Les Kiancorla, first female elected. And in terms of opposition, opposition is very important in a Dáil. On each occasion that I was elected, we went up to Dublin, a group of like-minded TDs, to see could we form a government, to see could we do that. But the differences were so vast. The housing crisis is a direct consequence of...
Other independents and left-wing TDs were able to make that choice in 2016, in 2020 and this year.
I'm being asked a question and I'm doing my best to answer it as best I can. Every single election, I considered and discussed joining a government. There has to be a fundamental change. And the movement that I represent at the moment, I hope that will be the movement at the next election that will shape a completely different republic, where housing crisis of 16,000 people rising will never be looked on as collateral damage. That's the way we're looking at housing, a thriving, a growth economy and 16,000 people homeless. Obscene waiting lists. And you can't, the Dáil is made up of government and opposition. It's really important that we value each voice within that Dáil to put forward different policies and fight for them, which I did on so many issues, from housing to the mother and baby home scandals and all of those issues, climate change, fossil fuel divestment bill that was pushed by Thomas Pringle, and we successfully put it through the Dáil.
Yeah, Catherine, I stepped up made the hard decisions. And it wasn't easy. And when you make decisions, then you're open to criticism. But I did my best. And did we get everything right as a government? No, we didn't. And of course we didn't get enough houses built. And that's a disappointment. But we did our best.
A disappointment.
Yeah, it is very disappointing that we haven't got more houses, because we're spending billions on housing and we still need to get more houses. That's the solution. Billions has been spent. But what I'm saying is, I stepped up, I stepped into government, I made the hard decisions. I've never had the luxury of being able to sit on an opposition bench and say whatever you want to say and keep changing your mind as you see fit. I took the hard decision and I'm glad I did, because I was able to affect real change in people's lives.
Catherine Connolly.
First of all, the housing crisis is a consequence of government policy. The government set up a housing commission. The strongest conclusion that jumped out of that report was we needed a radical reset of housing policy. That's Ivra Hain. Ivra, though, I have never kept changing my mind. To frame me in those words is simply unacceptable. It's difficult to be in opposition, TD. You have to work twice and three times as hard to do your research, to stand up, make coherent arguments and represent the people who elected you, who are suffering on a daily basis, and put forward a different vision based on evidence, based on facts and based on research. That's the way I've always worked.
Both of you are promising to represent all the people of Ireland. Heather Humphreys, how will you represent the people who've protested against asylum seekers in Coolock, Rosslare, Rooski, Ooctorard, Carrickmacross and more?
I promise to represent everybody, because I will be a president for all. It's something that I feel strongly about in terms of the division that is coming into our society. There's a lot of division there. And as a president, I want to bring unity. I want people to sit down, have conversations and try and break down those prejudices and those barriers that are being created in our society. I want to do that within our communities. By talking to people. That's the first way you started. We saw how a peace process process evolved in Northern Ireland, how people came together. You only will achieve unity through discussing, through having those hard conversations. And I am prepared to do that. And I have experience in bringing people together, in having those in having the conversations they need to have to break down those prejudices. Because we need people coming into this country. We need people coming in.
Would you tell them they're wrong?
I don't. We have to talk to people. You have to understand people. You have to dig in there and to find out why they feel the way they are. That's the way you deal with a problem. You have to have negotiation. You have to talk to them, and you have to get in there. And
well, their banners say that they feel Ireland is full. Will you tell them they're wrong?
Well, Ireland is a land of opportunity. People who come here, many people come here, and they're contributing to our health service, contributing to our care services right across this country. But what I can say is there are those that are coming here, seeking asylum. They need to be processed quickly, and if they're not entitled to be here, they need to be returned. And if they are entitled to be here, then they go through the process. And a lot of them want to contribute to our society.
Catherine,
there's
Connolly,
no doubt about that.
What would you do specifically to represent the people who are putting up Irish flags on their streets throughout the capital and further, including in streets that you would have visited yesterday?
Well, actually, I find the terminology Ireland is full actually disturbing and unacceptable. However,
it's on the banners being held up by the people who are protesting. People who you will have to represent.
I find it disturbing and unacceptable. That doesn't mean I won't be able to listen to people who feel disconnected, who feel the need to say things like Ireland is full, which is not based on any evidence or any facts. And if we look at asylum seekers, there's a conflating of words all the time that we're being overrun in our country. I attended India Independence Day a few weeks ago, and I had the facts before me. 18,500 of our nurses and midwives are from India. So there's a conflating of language here and a mixing up of people seeking refuge, asylum status,
yes,
and people coming into the country looking for work. We're short of workers. We can't get work permits for people. All of us as TDs have made representations for work permits. So let's look at what's been said here. Ireland is full. There's a frustration on the ground with a certain group of people, and I understand their frustration. Absolutely. We have a major
housing... How would you represent them, Catherine Colley? How would you lead on reversing
absolutely,
the exclusion or othering of immigrants?
Absolutely. Listen and hear what's been said. And I think the anger is being channeled to the wrong people. The frustration and anger of a small group of people on the ground is channeled in the wrong way. We have a housing crisis and they're concerned about that. Hotels have been taken over for a very long time and obscene profits being made by the owners in relation
to dealing. Does that justify their protests?
No. I'm already said that I find it disturbing, that type of language. Absolutely. I have no hesitation in saying that. But Gavin, I've engaged with people going around and they've come up to me to say, use these words, and I have argued back with them. I've listened to them, I've argued back, and I've listened to their anger and said, your anger is misplaced. Certainly I agree with you about a housing crisis, about the long waiting list. Let's look at this together. Let's channel our anger in a manner that's beneficial to all of us.
Heather Humphreys, a president for all is on your poster. One of your former constituents, Lucia O'Farrell, campaigned for 13 years, beginning in 2012, for a public inquiry into her son Shane's death by a driver who'd been out on bail. His family finally got a Dáil apology this year, but no public inquiry. Why did your constituent not deserve a public inquiry? You didn't vote for it on two occasions.
Well, first of all, can I just say I have huge sympathy for the O'Farrell family, and the loss of Shane was just devastating for them. And you know, I really do. My heart goes out to Lucia and the rest of the family. They've been through a difficult time. I did talk to Lucia when she raised this matter with me.
Did you meet
initially
her?
I spoke to her at length over the phone. I made representations on her behalf.
What representations did you make?
I made representations to Minister Shatter at the time. I made representations to Minister Flanagan at the time. And I also received correspondence, which I sent to the relevant minister. And I did speak to her again. And
she says she didn't acknowledge or reply to her letter of last year.
I did speak to her on the phone last year, if I remember correctly. But at the end of the day, I did my best.
Yes.
And I'm sorry if she felt I didn't do enough.
You said that repeatedly, that you're sorry if she feels you didn't do enough. She says you didn't.
I'm sorry that...
Why didn't you vote for the public inquiry on two occasions in the Dáil?
Yeah, well, I wasn't the minister dealing with that at the time.
You were a member of the Dáil. You were entitled to vote. Yeah. Why didn't you vote along with the majority of TDs at the time for a public inquiry in 2018 and 2024?
I wasn't the minister at the time. The minister was leading that. I was the minister for justice for 6 months.
Why didn't you vote in the Dáil for the public inquiry?
Well, there was reasons behind that. I don't know exactly the detail of it. What I'm saying to you is, I was guided.
There were two occasions for you to vote for a public inquiry to back your constituent. Why didn't you vote in favour of a public inquiry?
Because the minister of the day brought forward a recommendation. I voted with the government at that particular time. I don't remember those two instances, to be quite honest with you. But what I can tell you is, I did my very best to help.
She says that wasn't enough.
I'm sorry if it wasn't enough. Anybody that came into my door, into my constituency office, I did my best for them. There are many instances where I have helped people many, many times. And indeed, there are other high profile cases where I have come and helped people and made a difference.
You were a TD for 3 years before becoming minister. You never raised a parliamentary question on it. The judicial scoping inquiry wasn't commissioned until 2019. Why didn't you actively campaign for your constituent from 2012? That's a big part of your job. You didn't even attend a vigil outside Leinster House in 2018 to support her family.
I made representations on her behalf. I'm sorry she says I didn't do enough. I'm sorry if that's the case. I really am. But I did my best.
Catherine Connolly, the front page of the Irish Times today is reporting that when you went to Syria in 2018, among those showing you around was Saeed Abd al-Al, the commander of the man known as the Butcher of Yarmouk and leader of a militia group responsible for the deaths and starvations of Palestinians in the refugee camp you were visiting. Were you aware of who he was?
No, I wasn't. I went to Syria on a fact-finding mission. The first port of call was the Palestinian refugee camp outside Beirut. Outside Damascus. We were to go to Beirut, but we joined the group later. And the group had gone to a Palestinian refugee camp outside of Beirut. We went from Beirut to Damascus on a trip, a fact-finding trip. We met different groups.
Yes, but your facts were being provided by a militia leader loyal to dictator Assad who had murdered Palestinians. How did you not know that?
I didn't know that. And you have no control when you go to a country like that as to who will come into your presence or not. That's no endorsement of the regime. I'm on record for condemning the regime. I did not meet with Assad. Our Taoiseach met with Assad. I went on a fact-finding mission in relation to the refugees. And that camp was utterly destroyed. Absolutely. It was. I went foolishly, and I've said this, thinking it would be a tented encampment. It was a city, utterly destroyed. And we listened to the refugees talk to us, and we listened to the background, and refugees from 1948 from the Nakba. We listened to the background to get a deeper understanding. During that visit, we went and we met with a UN organisation. We met with a nun who has since died, Sister Bridget Doody.
Yes,
we met with Syrian Christians. We met with a lot of people.
You said on the programme last month to Audrey that you were shown around by Palestinians. Mm. You were shown around by a man responsible for their deaths. How could you not have known that?
I have no control. When you go on a fact-finding mission and you go around for the purpose of deepening your knowledge about the refugee crisis, about how refugees were being treated from Palestine, how generation after generation from 1948 onwards and before that, which countries, it's ironic actually that they were treated, it's ironic.
But it was this man's militia who were showing you around.
Lots of people came up to us. We walked the streets. We walked everywhere when we got out of the bus. People came up to us, had conversation with us as best they could. Yes,
the Irish Syria Solidarity Movement is saying that what you said on that programme last month to Audrey was misleading, that you couldn't have met ordinary Palestinians, that to quote the Irish Irish Times is quoting Abu Yasser, a Palestinian resident in the camp, who says that at the time of your visit, there was no possibility of meeting ordinary Palestinians. They'd all fled.
That's not accurate. That's not accurate. People came up and spoke to us as openly as they could within a dictatorship.
How could they speak openly when the man who was showing you around was responsible for the deaths of Palestinians?
I'm going to repeat again. We went over on a fact-finding mission.
What facts were you trying to find out?
To see what the life of refugees were like, the Palestinian refugees, with a group of people that had visited lots of times before that, gone to the West Bank and this time to Beirut and to Damascus and other areas in Syria.
Who organised the visit?
It was organised by a group of activists. Rita Fagan is on record, who's a community activist for a very long time, who had visited the West Bank, and other people who were way, way more active than me. I look back with regret that I wasn't more active in relation to...
Just Rita Fagan? Who else was involved in organising it?
There were a number of people. I'm not going to give their names.
Is this a visit you've been asked about several times? Are you clear about who was behind
it? I'm very clear. Maureen O'Sullivan was with me, interestingly.
She didn't organise it, though,
no,
did she?
No, she didn't. But interestingly enough, the names Claire Daly and Mick Wallace have been repeated, not today. But
because they were with you at the time,
absolutely.
Yes.
But so was Maureen O'Sullivan, who arranged a meeting with a UN organisation. We visited a hospital. We spoke to lots of people. And we came back with an absolute horror of a dictatorship and also a horror of an ongoing refugee crisis that was just never ending.
Article 3 of the Constitution talks about uniting all the people in all the diversity of their identities and traditions. How would you give substance to the guaranteed dimension of Britishness under the Good Friday Agreement, Heather Humphreys?
I think it's important that we reach out the hand of friendship to Northern Ireland, and I would want to do what Mary McAleese did, build bridges with Northern Ireland. There are 1 million people in Northern Ireland that identify as British citizens. I would like to speak to them. I would like to say to them that I'm very proud of the country I live in, that I come from a minority community, and this country has served me well. It has given me everything I have, and it has made me what I am.
But to the question,
yes, I'm answering the question, Gavin. I want to reach out to the people, and I want to say,
what does that mean?
I want to say to the people in Northern Ireland, you have nothing to fear in this country, and that we need to have conversations.
How would you guarantee their Britishness?
Well, that's something that'll have to be worked out. There's no doubt about
that. What's your vision? As President
my
of Ireland,
vision,
what's your vision? How would you guarantee their Britishness?
My vision is that we continue to work on the basis of the Good Friday Agreement. We work towards a united Ireland.
On
but
a
we
specific
have to,
question of the guaranteed dimension of Britishness.
Yeah.
What's your vision of how that would be done?
Yeah, well, I feel that there is some way we can manage this. There's
what
many different ways, whether it's a devolved government in Northern Ireland
That's what's there at the moment.
Yeah, but it could work differently. There could be, you know, you could be talking about devolved government in Northern Ireland as part of an overall Irish solution. There are many, but these are the things...
I'm confused. That's what's there at the moment. How would that work in a united Ireland?
Yeah, but how that could work in a united Ireland is that the responsible or the lead country would be the Irish government. Those are all conversations that we have to have, and there's no point in preempting anything before you go in. You talk to people. The first thing we have to do is build trust. If we don't have trust, we have nothing. So we have to build trust. We have to deepen understanding, and I can see that very clear. There's still a lot of misunderstanding out there, so we have to deepen that understanding, build trust, and work together. Because I believe that we must unite people first, as John Hume said. And that is so, so important. And I feel I'm very well placed to bring that conversation forward and to bring and work on it, to work towards a united Ireland.
Catherine Connolly, when you talk about Irish unity, do you mean the North leaving the UK to become part of a single unitary Irish Republic, either under the existing constitution or with a new one? What's your vision?
My vision is that we would have a united Ireland, and the framework for that has been set in the Good Friday Agreement and also in our constitution in Article 3, and it says it is the firm will of the Irish people to have a united Ireland, of course by consent.
What would that look like?
And respecting all sides. That is a process that's in place. Indeed, I have here Ireland's Future, a civic organisation. I met with Senator Francis Black. I mentioned that because I sat with her and two people from Northern Ireland, that the North, who are part of this. And just, I have a list here of the engagements over the last number of years, engaging with people of all sides and all beliefs, meticulous, methodical work, ongoing for a united Ireland. And actually what struck me when I looked at this and when I engaged with that civic group was that the emphasis on similarities as opposed to differences, but actually respecting the differences. So a new Ireland has to absolutely respect and value diversity.
How would it do that? How would it give substance to the guaranteed dimension of Britishness? Practically.
I will do that as president in as much as I can.
What's under your vision of how that will be done?
My vision of that as president, which has nothing to do with policy, and this is a political decision that has to be worked out on the ground meticulously and methodically.
You're looking to be president. People would like to know your vision of how that would look.
My vision as president will be to reach out to communities on all sides. I visit Northern Ireland repeatedly. I visited different communities. I will facilitate open forums in relation to listening and building on the work that's ongoing. It's really important. The meticulous, methodical work is ongoing by civic organisations on the ground. What's lacking is a government response. There was a cross-party committee that reported last year. That report is sitting on a shelf. That committee asked the government to prepare a green paper to outline the issues and outline the direction for a united Ireland. That hasn't happened, unfortunately. That's a policy and a political decision by governments.
Why hasn't that happened, Heather Humphreys?
I think what we need to understand here is that there has to be more work in terms of building trust. I was in Belfast last week. I visited Mary McAleese's old school, St Dominic's, and I met the students there. I met the teachers. I met some of the nuns that used to teach Mary, and they're doing a cross community project with another school. So they're trying to build bridges among young people at an early age. I went out then to a unionist community, and I spoke to them, and they said to me, "Heather, we have peace, but there's a lot of division. So we need to work on that. We really do. We need to sit down. We need to talk."
Nearly 30 years after the Good Friday Agreement.
Well, we've come a long way. I have to say we've come a long way. And I want to acknowledge the work that was done initially by Bertie Ahern and Mo Molam. They didn't do it through a microphone. They sat in the room. They did the hard
minds. And dealt with practicalities.
And dealt with practicalities.
Okay, well,
is
on
right.
practicalities, yeah, for well, example, who would draft a new constitution, for example? Would you expect unions to sit down and help draft it?
No, just hold on a second now. We have the Good Friday Agreement, Gavin.
Just put a practical question to you.
No, just wait a minute now. We have the Good Friday Agreement. We have come a long way. I live on the border and I know exactly that we have come a long way. Brexit stopped us a little bit. It knocked us back on our tracks. There's no question about that. And some people here supported Brexit. I can tell you now, it stopped us in our tracks and it was very difficult. But I fought hard to keep that border, to make sure we did not have a border with Northern Ireland, to keep it away from us. Because I know what it's like when there's a border between us and the rest of the north of Ireland. So what we need to do is we need to work hard. We need to have conversations. And I will use the Oras as a safe place for unionists to come to outline their concerns, for nationalists to come to talk to each other. I will also have a cross-border schools initiative where you have young children coming from both traditions in Northern Ireland, nationalists and unionists, meeting children from here, from this country, both nationalists and unionists. And have the children from this country meeting the ones from Northern Ireland, having those conversations. All I can say to you is it's important that we have to talk to each other. We have to deepen understanding, and we must bring people together. And I will use the Oras to do that, just like Mary McAleese did. And we'll continue to work hard.
Catherine Connolly.
The peace process is in place from 1998, and peace comes about through very difficult conversations, methodical and meticulous. And so the government, the party sat down cross-party and produced a report that sits on a shelf. So no preparation. Interestingly, we've had the leader of the Alliance Party calling on the Northern Ireland secretary to set a date for a border poll. So things are moving on all the time, but we need the government to lead in terms of acting on the cross-party support. I just in relation to people here, I'm not sure what people here who they are objected or agreed with Brexit. Maybe you did, Gavin, because it's been thrown out. Some people here supported Brexit. I'm not sure, is it yourselves that supported Brexit or the people out here monitoring us? Perhaps it can be clarified.
Catherine, you very clearly spoke up on different occasions. You very clearly said that you used the words of Nigel Farage, and you said that we were trying to instill fear into the British people by saying that there should be no Brexit. I know why there should be no Brexit, because I can tell you it caused a lot of problems. It could easily have slipped into huge difficulties with Northern Ireland. Common. And my main concern was the border with Northern Ireland, that it would not return. Briefly. And I don't think you can understand how difficult that was. I know what it was like when you had to live there.
And you've made the point. Catherine Conlon, if you want to respond.
Just, you know, when things are thrown out, it's very difficult. So I'm being accused of not agreeing with Brexit or agreeing with Brexit, which is totally inaccurate. Now, Heather has done this on numerous occasions. She said that my director of elections was Paul Murphy. That
he's connected to your election. If I could call him.
These are very
associated with it, Catherine.
Yeah. Over and over, allegations are being made without any foundation. I have a very, very competent female director of elections, and this is on the record. Okay. Heather knows this, and yet she throws it out as she's thrown out other things. And this is not acceptable.
Okay, and you've responded. It's been widely reported, you've both expressed your horror for Israel's war on Gaza. When Israel sends an ambassador back to Ireland, how are you going to receive them, Catherine Conlon?
You know, it's interesting. I never called for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador. So that's interesting. I never call for that. I felt she should have been brought in on a regular basis and our views made known, government views, on the appalling slaughter in Palestine. That didn't happen. And actually, I was appalled that this woman was given so much time to back up what was happening in Israel. As president, I have a role, I will have a role to meet everybody and treat them with dignity and respect. Absolutely. I've done that over and over as Lasky and Corla.
Okay. Heather Humphreys.
Look, there's a fragile ceasefire holding, but the world must not turn away or let it slip backwards. It's a fragile situation in Gaza, as we know at the minute. And of course, I will meet any head of state if elected as president. And it's the job of the president to receive ambassadors who come to this country.
Donald Trump will very likely be here in the term of your presidency for a golf tournament or a visit. As a woman, Heather Humphreys, how would you feel meeting a man who's been found liable for sexual assault in a civil court and has expressed misogynistic views on several occasions?
Yeah. Look, Donald Trump is an elected president in the US. I respect his mandate and, like any other democratically elected leader, I will meet him.
Catherine Conlon.
You know, it's interesting, we're at a point in our history where we're reliant on President Trump for a peace initiative when he was absolutely behind the genocide and absolutely funded and resourced Israel to carry out.
Is that something you'd point out when you meet him?
No, it's important to give context to carry out a genocide. And now we're utterly dependent on this man to bring peace. Such is the volatility of the world. Obviously, as a president, I will welcome in my role as president. However, it is this context always that's important, and we're in a very, very volatile state, which means that I, as president, will use my voice as often and as clearly as I can in relation to peace. That's what we have in our constitution, that we seek to resolve conflicts through peaceful means. Now more than ever, as an independent, neutral state, we need to use our voice for peace.
As a woman, will you find it difficult to meet him, Heather?
Look, he has a mandate, and I respect that mandate, and I will meet him.
Okay. Seven references to God in the Constitution. Article 6 says that all powers of government, legislative, executive and judicial derive under God from the people. You're going to be asked to swear an oath in the presence of Almighty God when you become president. Catherine Conlon, do you believe in God?
I certainly believe in something bigger than me, and I respect the Constitution that refers to God, and I'll take a public and solemn vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. I've no difficulty with that. God for me means somebody that's beyond us, that represents idealism, that represents perfection, that represents all the best that we strive for as a country.
How much of your beliefs are shaped by your belief in God?
Well, I come from... How much? Ask me that question again.
How much are your beliefs shaped by your belief in God?
My belief is in a better society, and a society where we strive for fairness, for equality. All of those ideals are part of anybody's concept of a God, a God that's gracious. So we all have different concepts of what God is. And I think we have to respect that, absolutely respect that. And that's the Constitution. I have no difficulty. The important part of that is a public and solemn vow to serve the welfare of the people.
In the presence of Almighty God. Do you believe in God, Heather Humphreys?
Yes, I do believe in God. And indeed, my faith has shaped my values in life.
In what way?
In terms of tolerance, in terms of respect, in terms of treating people as you would like to be treated yourself. So I do go to church, and but I don't impose my views on anybody else. I think religion is a very private matter. But yes, I do believe in God. And
we're almost done. One of the primary responsibilities of the President is to represent us at home and abroad, and a deep understanding and appreciation of our heritage and culture is essential. Literature, a key part of that. Catherine Connolly, who's your favourite Irish author or poet, and what piece of their writing do you imagine you'll be quoting in your speeches?
There are so many that I admire particularly, in English and Irish, you know. Lee Machanumra comes to mind. Seamus Heaney comes to mind. Many female poets come to mind. And I think we should treasure our diversity, treasure the value of that. And it's a celebration, really. It's a fantastic country with a history of wonderful literature in both Irish and English, and I'll certainly be reflecting on how best to use that and bring it to that.
Heather Humphreys?
Yeah, well, I've been fortunate enough to represent Ireland on many occasions culturally as Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht. I've been to America, and you know our culture is our wonderful calling card.
It's
something we should be very proud of. I think my favourite poet is Seamus Heaney, but I'm currently reading a wonderful book at the minute by Frank McNally. It's called Not Me Making Hay, and it really does outline very clearly what life is like in rural Ireland, and it's also peppered with politics and many different things. It's a great read.
Heather Humphreys, Catherine Connolly, thank you both very much for your time this morning. We'll be back after this break.